all rely on our highly evolved emotions to steer us in the right direction and avoid danger. But it's a complex system that can sometimes use a little help, which is when I turn to stimulants. That's right, I'm talking about spark plug coffee. When I need to indulge my chemical dependency on caffeine to keep my brain in tip-top shape, I only want the best coffee, and the secret to making the best cup of coffee is starting with freshly roasted beans. Spark Plug starts with premium Arabica beans that are always directly sourced and fairly traded. They offer blends and roasts to suit any taste. Right now, I'm enjoying the seasonal blend Mugshot, which is really lighting up the joy center of my brain. But the best part is that Spark Plug delivers this first-rate coffee to you within 1 week of custom roasting it here in Toronto, so that it always reaches you fresh and at its peak flavor, and you will taste the difference. You can order Spark Plug as you need it, or join the Spark Plug Autopilot Coffee Club. The Autopilot Coffee Club is not a coffee of the month club. It's completely personalized and flexible, comes with all kinds of member benefits. And if you use the promo code TOP100PROJECT at checkout, and that's all one word with the number 100, SparkPlug is offering 20% off your next coffee order. That applies to any size order, and you don't need to be a new customer to take advantage. It's time for your favorite cup of coffee to start coming from your own kitchen. Plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com.
This coffee gives me such joy! Not much sadness or fear or disgust. Maybe some anger sometimes. Not anger either. Just joy.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Aloha, movie lovers, and thanks for downloading the next 199 Project, the never-ending classic films podcast. We got into your lives back in 2013 when we reviewed all 123 titles on the 1998 and 2007 AFI Top 100 lists. Then we decided that was no time to quit, so we just kept on looking back at Flickr shows from ages ago. And spoiling them. I'm the imaginary friend who cries candy and loves triple dent gum. Oh, that triple dent gum. That does get in your ear, doesn't it?
Yeah.
One hell of an earworm. Ryan Ellis. And here's a lady who, much like San Francisco, has ruined pizza!
Would never.
My wife, Bev.
That's me.
One of Lewis Black's best moments. Congratulations, San Francisco! You've ruined pizza! You ever had broccoli on pizza?
Yeah. It's better than you think it would be.
I could see that. I don't have a problem with broccoli. I don't like Brussels sprouts.
I'm not going to say I'm going to come to the defense of Brussels sprouts, but when you cover them in enough salt and sugar and whatever else people put on them to make them taste good, they can be good.
That's probably true of your socks.
Yes. I totally agree. Kale, same.
All right, before we get further into Inside Out, some housekeeping. We now have 404 podcasts on this channel. I've done 52 with Chris for Scoring at the Movies, plus the short episode I did promoting that he and I were about to start a podcast, plus I reviewed Brightburn by myself last year. So that makes this the 350th time the Ellises have sat down to chat about films.
That was me popping champagne.
So that's all the Top 100 Project, Not 100 Project, Now Playing Project, Next 100 Project episodes, and various bonus shows like the COVID specials and the Oscars post-view shows. 350, round number. Yay! We like round numbers. But because the bug in my ball cap for quite a while now has been this confusing number system with the Next 100 Project, which I came up with, I thought it was going to be clever, but we're going to change what we call this podcast from next week's episode on. Rather than make Apollo 13 next week the Next 200 Project, because that's really sounding dumb, we'll just ditch all that and start calling this thing the Ellis's Analysis. Say that 5 times fast. Say that 3 times fast.
Top 100 Project presents...
The Ellis's Analysis.
The Ellis's Analysis.
Of movies. Maybe we'll still change that. Who knows? But we like the sound of that because it is hard to say. It's part of the fun of it. So the logo and the name of the podcast will still be the Top 100 Project. The promo code on Sparkplug Coffee will also still be Top 100 Project, one word with a number. But the individual episodes will just be 351, 352, and so on, presents, that thing. You get it now. So we won't be confused by that anymore. Although the Scoring at the Movies episodes does skew all this, but they weren't supposed to still be on this channel, and they still are. But okay. Chris, you messed it all up! It's all his fault. It's not his fault. It's mine. Okay, the coming attractions opinion for this week's podcast... Inside Out. The voice cast is tremendous, and I wouldn't want anyone else to play these characters, but let's have some fun and recast the emotions in Riley's head. Who else could you see as Joy, Fear, Disgust, Anger, and Sadness?
Okay, so I'll start with Joy. I picked Tiffany Haddish. She's always really cheerful and sunshiny and positive, but she has this natural authority. She's not bossy, but she could get a room full of people, I feel, to do just whatever she wants without anybody realizing that she's in control. She just is this force of forward momentum, and I feel like she would be a great joy for that reason. Also, just because she does kind of exude joy. Next, sadness. I said Emo Phillips. He wouldn't have to do anything.
He could use the work, too.
Fair enough. He could just use his regular voice, and it would be hysterical. Anger, this is the one that I just could never think of anybody better than Lewis Black. You say we couldn't recast any of them, but this is the hardest. But I did say Jason Alexander. I'm not a huge Seinfeld fan, to your chagrin, but I am forever delighted by George's absolutely unhinged temper tantrums. So I thought that would be funny. Yep. For fear, I picked Amy Sedaris, who's always the most keyed up person in anything she's in.
Okay, good call.
And for disgust, I went with Ali Wong. I feel all like right. She's disgusted with me when I watch her through the TV. I feel like I've let her down somehow.
And she's funny, too. Because people need to be funny in this, and all five of them in the actual movie are.
Yeah, I guess everybody I picked is, well, not necessarily a stand-up comic, because Jason Alexander certainly isn't. And
but
I don't
funny.
Think Amy Sedaris is either, but they're all professional comedians.
Okay. I don't disagree with any of those choices, but I don't actually have the same ones for mine. Joy, I thought of Darcy Carden.
Yes.
From Community, for those who maybe don't recognize the name. I heard her on our podcast lately. She's over the top fun and joyful. I thought Meryl Streep might be fun as Fear. Because talk about weird casting. Or, and I've been saying this to you lately when we watch Rick and Morty, Chris Parnell. What a great voice he has. And he's been excellently cast as Jerry, Morty's father. So Meryl Streep or Chris Parnell. Different there. Disgust, Lewis Black. Recast him as Disgust. He's great as Anger, but it'd be fun to hear him. But here's one that's really out of left field. Do you recognize the name Rachel Harris?
Yes.
She's Ed Helms' wife in the Hangover movies. And she is always, when she's on screen in those movies, which is not often, disgusted.
Full of contempt. Yeah. That is her only feature in that film.
Anger, to me, was the easiest one to recast. Because Lewis Black is fantastic. You've ruined pizza. We know that. Al Pacino would be fun. Daniel Day-Lewis, especially in his There Will Be Blood character. Or Fox.
Our late dog, Fox.
I would be perfect as Anger. Oh, he's still mad at things.
He's furious. You dare come to the door.
You dare come in Riley's brain. And sadness, Cynthia Erivo, especially based on just finishing The Outsider. Might be an interesting, weird choice. Maybe not the best one, but just struck me to do that. Or Donald Trump. Sad.
No.
Sad, very sad.
Fastest way to ruin anything is to put Donald Trump in it.
Okay, we've had a long build-up to this podcast. Let's get into it. Inside Out, or Intensamente, as it was known in South America. Or, I like this one, I saw this online, Joy Story. Isn't that great?
Yes!
It was released by Pixar 5 years ago on June 19th, 2015. It did very well at the box office, both over here and especially worldwide. But since the movie's 5 years old, Bev, you might want to remind people what this wonderful film is about with the skinny on Inside Out.
Meet Riley, an 11-year-old girl whose family has just moved from Minnesota to San Francisco, putting a lot of pressure on her brain, which is run by her five most prominent emotions: joy, sadness, disgust, anger, and fear. Together, led by Joy, Riley's emotions manage her behavior and her memories. But disaster strikes when Joy and sadness are ejected from brain headquarters and have to find their way back through a labyrinth of long-term memories, imagination, dreams, and trains of thought before Riley completely unravels.
Incidentally, apparently they cut out a ton of emotions. They had dozens of other ones. But some of the big ones were surprise, trust, and pride. But the five they picked make a lot of sense, don't they?
Yeah, they seem like core emotions. And they consulted with psychologists when they were writing the script, so they must have picked it based on what experts agree are the most important base emotions. Of course, there are as many emotions as there are colors, which is infinite, but you can make any color if you have red, yellow, and blue.
Okay, in a nutshell, preteen prefers Minnesota to San Francisco, so that makes her an idiot!
I know. One day she's going to be like, can you believe I wanted to stay in Minnesota?
I miss my hockey team. That's a wonderful ending, but what's wrong with you, kid? By the way, the idiot reference, the way I said it just now, that is not a Lewis Black thing. You and I have been doing that for years watching Jeopardy. When somebody doesn't get something, even though they're obviously smarter than we are.
Twice in a show when we know an answer.
Sometimes a lot more. Depends. But yeah, when they don't get
track.
It. I think I've done the most. It would be three in a row they didn't get. And I got to say idiot three times in a row. That started when I first met you, though. It was a lot of fun. Because I was mocking somebody for not getting something. And you said, they're an idiot.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, the Rotten Tomatoes numbers on Inside Out. should be 100%, but they're not. 98% of critics like the film, 358 fresh, 7 very bad people didn't like the movie, for an average of 8.9 out of 10, and 89% of audiences. The audiences are a little bit off there, too. Why is that not 100? The movie's 158th on the IMDb's 250. Scoring at the movies, we covered Warrior just last week, which is around the 159-160 range. So it's funny to see these two movies. I didn't mean to do that, but they're basically back-to-back on the IMDb 250. And, of course, nothing in common, Inside Out and Warrior. Inside Out was fourth at the 2015 U.S. box office. The Force Awakens, of course, was number one. Creed was number 29. You and I covered that quite a few years ago. And Spotlight, which we covered earlier this year, was 62nd. The movie's also 167th all-time, if you adjust for inflation, at the U.S. box office. And it won one Oscar, the animated feature, which was against pretty weak competition. I didn't write down who they all were, but none of them are all that memorable. This was easily the best film anyway. To me, the best film of the whole year. The only other nomination for Inside Out was for the screenplay. Spotlight won the original screenplay that year. Very good choice, very good screenplay. But then no Best Picture nomination should have had that. No music score nomination, no sound or sound effects. All that's inconceivable! Especially Best Picture. A lot of people thought, I wasn't the only one, it should have been in that category, because once you open it up for all kinds of other movies, you can fit the animated films. And that's happened. Up was one of the nominees, and it probably wouldn't have been.
Toy Story 3 was, too.
Toy Story 3 was also. And they wouldn't have been, I don't think, if you'd gone with the 5 they always had. The only time it had ever happened before that was Beauty and the Beast. And since then, it's been a few times. But this should have been one of them, too. Anyway, long build-up. Obviously, I love this movie. I've given that away easily here. What do you think of Inside Out?
I think it's incredible. It's a feat in itself that they pulled it off without once resorting to cheap tricks. It always sticks to the rules it makes for itself, and it's an absolute delight to watch. It's funny, it's perfectly paced, almost Miyazaki levels of imagination. And both times I've watched Inside Out, I found myself really heavily reflecting on the work I've done in therapy. Joy's arc strongly resembles one of my biggest breakthroughs in therapy, which is embracing negative emotions, and it just feels impressively honest.
If I may quote a movie we've covered this year already, you are angry at your father. You're very angry at your father. Thousands of dollars in therapy for that. You're not angry at your father, but that was a Pretty Woman reference.
Well, not anymore. Therapy.
It's more your mom. Yeah, anyway. So...
Luckily, she's never listened to this because she doesn't support anything I do. maybe I need to go back. Therapy. Carry on.
Well, the villain in the movie is simply growing up. I guess the other villain would be Joy's controlling nature.
Well, Joy's the one, in a way, that needs to grow up.
Well, this is a movie about growing up, and Joy, and all the other emotions for that matter, grow up as much as Riley does in the short period of time. The movie takes place in, I don't know, a matter of weeks or a few months, maybe. And the emotions grow up, too. They often, well, they almost always work together. I love that notion, that you could just have them be afraid. And disgusted, and mad, and sad, and of course happy. But when the three are left in the control center, fear, disgust, anger, they're working together. They're trying their best. They're not good at it, and they know they're not good at it. They know they need Joy to run things, because she always did before. But they love Riley, too. And they also obviously like Joy, and probably even sadness. They've all lived together for all these years, 11 years. Apparently, when Mindy Kaling, who does disgust so well, read the script, she cried. And she also said to the filmmakers, it's difficult to grow up, and it's okay to be sad about it. And apparently Pete Docter, who directed this movie, said, write that down. Now, that's not a line in the movie, but it's obviously a sentiment.
It's a beautiful sentiment that movies in general, but especially kids' movies, rarely address. When the movie illustrates how Riley is systematically encouraged to be happy all the time, even when she's not happy, her parents reward her for faking it.
Her mother literally asks her to do that.
Yeah, suppress your bad feelings. I know this is hard, but I need you to just power through
Daddy
and
needs
pretend.
This more than I need this,
yeah,
is what she says.
Right, pretend nothing's wrong. That sentiment is actually probably what most kids' movies are guilty of. Think positively and go for it, and don't let any negativity get you down. And sadness is always seen as the enemy in most media that's made for children. So this movie's incredibly refreshing and correct.
Sadness saves Riley, as Joy literally says at one point. One of the great touches in this movie actually is when you see the parents' emotions as well.
Oh, yeah.
And did you notice that sadness in Mom's head is in charge?
Yeah.
Joy is the one who presses the buttons in Mom's head. Not the same Joy, not Amy Poehler. Because, of course, they recast the voices smartly. Why have the exact same voices? I guess you could argue that they could be, but that would be confusing. But anyway, Joy is at the controls, but Sadness seems to be in charge. And it makes me wonder from the future if Riley's also going to have Sadness be the one in charge, but Joy actually does the button pushing. But then again, it seems to be in the other heads, at least the mom's head, maybe the dad's head too, but certainly the mom's, that they're working together. Like we're seeing Riley's emotions are working together. It doesn't have to be that Joy is dominating everything. And she's obviously learned that hard lesson in a good way. And in dad's head, it's supposed to be that it's all males. But then if you look closely, and they point this out online too, it isn't. It's just that I think it's at least two of them are female emotions, but they're wearing mustaches. I forget which ones they are.
Oh, because dad has a mustache, they all wear mustaches?
I guess that's it. But at least two of his emotions are female. Now, what are they on Riley? You've got three women and two men who do the voice casting for that. I guess we haven't said who the actual casting was. We talked about who we should cast instead. And they're all great, so that was just an exercise for fun. But Amy Poehler is Joy, Phyllis Smith is Sadness, Bill Hader is Fear, Mindy Kaling is Disgust, and Lewis Black is Anger. Rashida Jones does the voice of the cool girl, or at least the voice in her head. Maybe that's what it is as well. Another pretty big name actress. A lot of people from TV shows in this, actually.
Well, one of Amy Poehler's best friends, too. That's probably how she ended up doing a bit part.
Oh, from Parks and Rec.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, one thing I wasn't, even after all the time, I think at least the fourth time I've seen this movie, fully clear about is, are these little, call them people, the emotions, whatever, but people. Are these little people controlling all of our emotions, which is both comforting and troubling at the same time, or is it more that they're just cataloging the memories?
No, they're controlling because they have the control board there that they actually affect Riley's choices and behavior.
That's not fully consistent in this movie, though, because there are times when she does things when the emotions aren't involved.
Yeah, that's true. There has to be some other process they just don't illustrate in the movie of Riley making decisions in one way or another.
And I want to dwell on that because the movie is so well done and for the most part, pretty consistent.
It's just so fantastical when you're inside Riley's head. It's obviously not what the inside of a brain looks like. Nobody thinks that. It's just meant to be a metaphor for how different aspects of our brain work together to make us be. If everybody on Earth, even cats and dogs, have these emotions, is there the same emotions working away in Joy's head?
Well, that's my what happens next. We'll do it right now then. What happens next? I have two thoughts on this. We'll get to the second one. I'm giving away basically what that's going to be. But my first thought was Riley and Caroline from Traffic. So Erica Christensen. Christensen? I guess it's Christensen, actually. It's spelled that way, not Christensen. Maybe I was saying that wrong in that podcast. Anyway, they find each other on Instagram or Snapchat and conspire to run away together and never go home again. Okay, that's too depressing.
Yeah.
So instead, here's the other one. We learn about the little people inside of the heads of Joy, Sadness, Fear, Disgust, and Anger because it's a nesting doll. They have controllers and they have controllers and they have controllers and so on and so on.
And on and on.
But it is one of the better touches in the whole film when you see them inside of the parents' heads and you see them inside of, isn't it animals' heads?
Yeah, you see dogs and cats.
The guy that talks to Riley at the very end of the film and, girl, girl, girl.
That's so cute.
One thing about this movie is painfully emotional as it is, and I don't mean that in a bad way, in a great way, painful. It so often is very emotional, but it's also really funny. And more than most movies, I think, that we've ever covered, we've ever even seen, the best laughs are in the middle. There are laughs in the beginning, and there are laughs in the last section when Riley's trying to run away to Minnesota on the bus. But in the middle section, when Joy and Sadness are on their, effectively, a road trip, in a way this is a road trip movie, and Riley's lost because she doesn't have Joy or Sadness controlling her, and we find out that Sadness is a good thing, a positive emotion for her to have. But some of the stuff with Bing Bong, before that gets really sad, people they meet, Frank Oz and Dave Goals, I guess is his name, both Muppet characters. Frank Oz often works with Pixar. He's done a lot of voices for them over the years. But some of the stuff in the middle section is hilarious. And I think that's also, yes, it is, where we see the parents have the same emotions in their head, but just it's different.
Oh, having the fight over the dinner table.
And he's not paying attention. Pete Docter, again, the director and co-writer, he said that that's based on his own life, where he's been probably thinking about Pixar movies at home with his wife and his family. And then, what's that, dear? What?
Isn't Pixar based near San Francisco? So it's possible that Pixar employees would have had to uproot their families for their dream job in San Francisco?
Yeah, well, this is based on a lot of things. Docter, I think, maybe from Minnesota, or at least the Midwest.
He moved to Denmark when he was a kid. Oh, this is another thing I find so relatable about this movie is that, I don't want to use the word trauma because it feels a little dramatic, but probably the worst thing that ever happened to me as a child would have been moving from another country to Canada. It was really difficult. It seems like it's this really low stakes thing, but for some children, for some adults even, being uprooted like that can be a really big deal.
Well, and you've said it before, but people may not know if they found this podcast just this one episode. Where were you coming from?
I was coming from Saudi Arabia, but I'm not Saudi Arabian. I am Lily White, we were Canadian, and then we moved there when I was very young and came back when I was 9.
Because your dad was working there.
So my dad was working there. And so I grew up on a compound with other Canadians. People were always coming and going. And it was a very unique place to grow up. And then when we moved back to Canada, which we had always thought that everything will be great. We can start our lives. Everything's going to be so amazing. Everything that was wrong with our lives was because of Saudi. And then when we moved back to Canada, everything legitimately for me was worse for years. We moved to a small town. I got really badly picked on by other kids. My sisters, same thing. Even both my parents said that returning to Canada was a really hard adjustment, as hard or harder than moving to Saudi.
Isn't it funny? Because I joked a few minutes ago that going from Minnesota to San Francisco, what's wrong with you? Wouldn't you rather be in San Francisco? Well, if your home has been Minnesota, even though it's a lot colder and maybe outwardly more dull, but that's where her best friend is. That's where her hockey team is. That's where everything she ever had was.
She said it was a really happy childhood and all of her memories are.
It doesn't matter where she lived, as much as it might seem like crap to the rest of us. It was home and it was heaven to her.
Oh, and let me state for the record, I'm glad we came back to Canada.
But the hard adjustment. I went through it a little bit too. I was younger than you. We only ever moved once when I was old enough to remember. There were more times than this in my whole life, but I was probably about 8 when we moved to the country from, not downtown Hamilton, but in the heart of Hamilton. And we moved to the country, not that far from Grimsby for people that are Canadian, or you want to look it up in Google Maps, you can. It's not that far from there. Lived right in the country for many years. But I've been through it too. You had it worse than I did, and Riley has it worse than both of us because she's also alone. You had 2 sisters. I had a sister and a brother.
Yeah, big deal.
Riley's 11 when they move to San Francisco, and the dad works for a startup. It seems like it might fail, too. I get that feeling that this startup is not going to work out too well. But I think that's also based, like you said, on Pixar people that probably go from Minnesota or Atlanta or the middle of Kentucky or the middle of Florida.
Probably
wherever.
All over the world. Pixar is that kind of company where you would move from anywhere.
And not everyone becomes Andrew Stanton or Pete Docter and a big player. Well, John Lasseter is one of the people that started Pixar, but he's really tainted. But those other guys who were just part of the team that ended up being big-time directors. Docter has only directed 3 Pixar movies so far, and each one's been more successful at the box office than the previous one.
And I would say 2 of those 3 are 2 of the very best Pixar movies, Inside Out and Up.
Yeah, Monsters, Inc. was the first one he ever did, and then it was Up 8 years later. And this was 6 years after Up. We covered Up last year, and now Inside Out this year. And they're 2 of the most emotional movies that anyone's done. So maybe Pete Docter is one of their truly best directors. Lasseter directed so many great movies that whatever he's done, his actual body work was outstanding. Andrew Stanton directed Finding Nemo and some other really great ones. He's certainly in the short list. But of all the great Pixar directors, Pete Docter is certainly one of the top talents of all time. And of course, a writer too. He's written on a lot of movies. He in fact has 2 Oscars, as does Jonas Rivera, who won for this movie. Docter for Up and Toy Story 4 for Jonas Rivera are the other 2 that they both have, so separately. Ronnie Del Carmen was a co-director on this with Docter, the only movie he's ever directed so far. The writers were Dr. Ronnie Del Carmen, Meg LaFauve, LeFauve, and then Josh Cooley, who went on to direct Toy Story 4, which just came out last year. And then Rivera was a producer with Stanton and Lasseter as executive producers. So the main plotline of this movie, with the emotions themselves, Riley, it's the whole hard thing about going to San Francisco, feeling alone, wants to go home to Minnesota where things make sense. But then anger puts that in her head. It's anger's fault that things start falling apart and making Joy and Sadness's trip back after they go up that tube. Back to the control center. It's his fault, really, more than anything else. He's not being a bad guy. He just makes a bad choice. But the main plotline for the emotions is Sadness going rogue and messing with the memory. She's doing that before really things go nuts. She's touching memories she's not supposed to.
It's kind of part of the reason things do go nuts.
Right. Is she hitting puberty, too, before Riley even hits puberty? Because that's one of the notions, that she's about to hit puberty when the movie ends. What's that little button there? Puberty. Oh, we won't worry about that.
I think it's so smart that Sadness seems to be accidentally spoiling things. She's constantly apologizing and explaining. She doesn't even know that she keeps making these things blue. She doesn't even realize herself that she's doing it. And it's a metaphor for the way suppressed emotions have a way of acting out and mirroring their heads. You can't actually suppress sadness, but when you try to, it presents in inappropriate ways. Sadness doesn't choose to be sad. It's not voluntary. I love that she is, bar none, the most empathetic of the 5 emotions. Mm-hmm. That moment that she has with Bing Bong illustrates so much about the catharsis of sadness as an emotion. Apparently, in initial versions, they paired Joy with fear to be exiled from headquarters because they thought that would be the funniest combination, but it wasn't working. They workshopped this movie for like 5 years, and Docter, frustrated, started to lose hope in the project and had convinced himself that somehow he was going to lose his job, which is hilarious to me. And it was the ensuing sadness that made him feel that gave him the breakthrough that sadness is a key part of growth. It's necessary for it, and it had to be sadness and joy lost together, and that's when everything clicked for him finally.
Diane Lane is mom, and Kyle MacLachlan is dad. Kyle MacLachlan we covered in Blue Velvet long ago. And mom, Diane Lane, her best performance might be in Unfaithful, where she was nominated for an Oscar. I didn't recognize their voices at all when I saw this. It was one of those things when it was over. I thought, okay, who played who in this movie? And I recognized the emotions pretty fast. Riley is Caitlin Diaz, who hasn't really done all that much else. She hasn't really gone off from this movie and done big things. But MacLachlan and Lane, I just didn't recognize them at all. But mom, having sadness as her controller in her head, she doesn't seem like a sad person, though. So you can see how that could be productive. So maybe if Riley's going on the same road and that's going to be her chief emotion, it doesn't have to be a bad thing. And of course, as Joy learns, sadness helped Riley. That's one of the moments I let it go. There were two times in this movie. I don't know if you noticed. I did shed some tears.
I didn't. You sneak.
Well, it was more the manly tears. I can definitely be a blubber.
Oh, okay. There were manly tears. Well, thank God.
Bing bong. But I brought that up in the best movies of the decade last year about how that could have been my favorite moment of the entire decade. The take her to the moon for me to Joy. But even before that, when Joy manipulates the marble ball thing with all the emotions and she sees the day when Riley's team saved her. And by the way, that's one thing that's in Mighty Ducks when Gordon Bombay is a kid. So Emilio Estevez's character. If he had these same teammates, maybe he wouldn't have grown up to be such an angry lawyer in need to be saved by the kids in Mighty Ducks because he missed one shot. Chris and I pointed that out in that podcast. They could have scored in overtime. The game went to overtime in that flashback. And one of the other guys could have scored a goal and it had to be him.
I hope they shamed him out of the sport.
They did. That's what happens in that movie. But when Joy rewinds the ball, if you want to call it that, and sees that mom and dad come on the tree and just sit with her for a few minutes, and then all the teammates come, that was the moment I cried. I guess combined with the bing bong thing. Maybe I didn't cry at that moment, but that's part of the bing bong when they're in that pit. I love that notion, too. It looks like the Infinity War endgame dusting. Same kind of notion that's just gone from history.
Well, in both cases, you have something that you want the audience to understand. It is absolutely gone forever.
Although in the Infinity War endgame saga, that's the whole point. They're not gone forever.
You're right.
But it's so similar and so powerful in both cases.
Can I confess something that's not going to endear me to anybody?
What?
Don't care for bing bong. I know. Nobody has ever reacted to this confession with anything but shock and disgust. Yeah,
bad person.
I remember after the movie, people were talking about how it made them cry so bad, and I started asking people, but what part made you cry?
Bing bong.
Okay. I didn't feel it at all. And listen, I cry like a child every single time I watch Up. So I do have a heart in there somewhere, but I don't know. Bing bong just doesn't charm me.
The other moment for me, by the way, is when Riley comes back and tells her parents and she can be honest again. Because don't forget, that's one of the islands that gets destroyed.
Honesty Island.
She's honest. I miss my team. I miss Minnesota. I miss my friends. And then dad's honest back. And so is mom, but especially dad. I miss all those things too. The reason why bing bong affects me, I don't remember having an imaginary friend. I guess maybe that's gone from my memory. Maybe just
good point.
Long ago. But I don't remember ever having one. I don't think I did. But I think what I am so touched by, maybe other people are too, is the sequence when Joy and Bing Bong use the sled to get out of the pit thing. First of all, it's great that it takes multiple tries, at least three. We see three, so I guess it's supposed to be three. If it worked the first time, it wouldn't be as effective. If it worked the second time, it would be more effective, but not as effective. It's that when they don't do it the second time, and Joy seems like she's giving up again. And Joy, by the way, goes through all the emotions in this movie. She's sad, she's fearful, she's disgusted, she's angry, and of course, most of the time, she's happy. But she goes through all the emotions that she's friends with in this movie. But she seems like she's about to give up, and then Bing Bong realizes, I'm starting to fade away here. His left arm is starting to fade away. So he makes that sacrifice. Now, in some ways, I can see why people like you would say, well, what's a sacrifice? He's about to be eradicated anyway. But it's, Joy, I got a good feeling about this one. And then he dives off the sled, and she gets up there on her own, because he's only thinking about Riley.
I'm not disagreeing with the sincerity of the moment. It just didn't get under my skin in particular.
But that whole sequence, because it's first Joy thinking about the hockey thing and realizing sadness saved Riley, which of course is the most important moment in the whole movie for her. And then they get out of that pit and bing bong goes. So in a matter of 2-3 minutes, huge things happen in this storyline. One of the key moments in this movie is when Joy shuts off the console, and that doesn't allow Riley to process her experiences through the day. But Joy demands constant joy. She can't let Riley have a bad day and then process that. But as it says online, that's what she needs to do, good or bad. And when joy and sadness get sucked up that tube and it becomes just fear, disgust, and anger, is this what it feels like for people who can't feel? Because really, joy and sadness are the stronger opposing emotions, ultimate happiness versus ultimate sadness. If you don't have either one of those things, I guess you're one of those people that walks around just, yeah, don't care, no, whatever.
I'm not a psychologist. I merely read a whole book about it one time, which makes me an expert. I suspect that it's a spectrum. We all feel joy and sadness. Some of us feel more joy, more sadness, but I go pretty wide on the spectrum. I can feel a lot of joy and I can feel a lot of sadness. No one would ever describe me as bipolar, but I figured that because I experience depression, and I do, that I get to enjoy higher highs on the spectrum. And when I feel joy, it can be the most wonderful thing. Whereas I suspect that you're a little more even-keeled. I think that you're kind of a smaller spectrum than I do.
The terrifying highs, the dizzying lows, the creamy middles. As far as me being more even-keel, I'm also the more volcanic of the two of us.
That's true. Actually, the next thing I was going to ask you is, which emotion is in charge in your head?
This wasn't always true, but the last 4 years, it's been anger.
It was anger before the last 4 years. I think you've just had more reasons to be angry, but...
A lot of times it's joy, though. I like to find fun in things. If this podcast has its... Well, this podcast does have fans, like any podcast does that lasts. I like to think that they enjoy our sense of humor. This podcast may not be flat out hilarious like some other movie podcasts are. They're trying to just rip on things and be jokey all the time. We do a lot of facts and figures, but I think joy is a pretty strong one. I don't think sadness necessarily is. I wouldn't say that fear and disgust are. Yeah. For me, it would be a combination of joy and anger more than anything else.
Yeah, I would agree. Joy is probably what runs the show, but anger is the right-hand man for sure.
We've also talked recently about how when it comes to movies, I'm the blind optimist and you're more the cynic. But when it comes to the real world, you're the optimist and I'm the cynic.
Now, lately, me being the optimist about the real world has done nothing but cause me grief because it can really make you disappointed when life lets you down. But it's true. I'm way more idealistic and sunshiny when it comes to life. But when it comes to movies, I don't like Bing Bong, for crying out loud.
You don't cry repeatedly at this movie like I did. My manly tears.
And I cry at advertisements sometimes. Like, I'm a very easy crier.
But you didn't watching this?
No.
Okay.
I think I got emotional. I don't think I came close to crying, but did you say one of the things that made you cry is when she finally opens up to her parents?
At the very end, when she comes back from the bus trip.
That gets me right here. That really did.
You know, one of the reasons why that works so well is because you've got the humans that have some big moments on screen. Not to say Riley's not a big part of this movie. She is the third lead. And this is something that Pixar started doing in the 2010s, 20-teens, whatever. Female leads. So Amy Poehler and Phyllis Smith, obviously, as Joy and Sadness particularly. But then Caitlin Diaz as Riley is the human lead, in a way, the main character.
Was there ever a female lead other than Brave? What is this, the 15th Pixar movie?
I didn't count, but something like that. But they've been more focusing on women in the past decade. Because Toy Story 4 is Bo Peep's movie. You shook your head.
No, but she's not the lead of that movie.
No, but she's the most important part of that movie. And it's really more about her than it is about Woody or Buzz. Buzz is barely in that movie. That's her movie. Brave, I didn't love it, but it's a girl character. And her mother as well turns into a bear. So they're the two main leads. So Pixar has been doing this more with female leads. That should touch you and anyone as well. It's nice that they finally started doing that.
I'm not going to give them that much credit. It took them. How many female leads have they had in how many movies? 10% of their movies have female leads.
People are making 15%. Efforts. Aren't efforts worth something?
Efforts are worth something. They have a lot of work to do.
Well, at least when they finally did have females dominate their movie, like this one does, they made one of their best movies ever.
Some people might see this as a criticism, but I actually think that it's a positive of the movie that you could replace Riley, even the name. You could make her a boy. And you wouldn't have to change one thing in the script except the gender pronouns. And I say that I like it because I think probably most little girls and little boys have a lot more in common than they have things that make them different. And I love that Riley is a girl that loves hockey and that's never a thing.
And is good at it too.
She's good at it. It's a big part of her life, of how she sees herself. Nobody ever is like, and she's a girl who plays hockey. Like, no, she just plays hockey. It's not a thing. It's not an issue. And even if this is an imaginary thing, it's a fictional movie. I don't know what it's really like for girls in sports growing up, because I hated them growing up. But she just gets to enjoy it. And nobody in this world sees anything weird about that.
And you wouldn't even have to change the imaginary boyfriend in the head. I would die for Riley. That could still be a boy.
True.
Loving another boy.
You're right.
That would be pretty courageous on Pixar's part, actually, if they had done that. Because they haven't really covered the gay stuff yet in their movies. If they have, I can't think of an example of that.
They have to worry about their Chinese market. Plus, they're owned by Disney now, who just cares about marketing internationally.
Yeah, it's part of the problem. The I would die for Riley gag slays me too. It's so funny.
So funny.
And it saves Joy and Sadness in the end too.
He dies for her.
He dies for Joy and Sadness effectively to save Riley, as does Bing Bong. Joy truly loves Riley, but she also can't handle it if her world has changed, which of course is true about Riley too, but Joy has a harder time accepting that than anyone else does in the whole movie. And we talked already about the emotions being just Infinity Ward away, if you will. But all those childish memories being torn down and thrown away, that's a bit of a tragedy as far as I'm concerned. I have a lot of memories of being a kid, but I don't have a lot of specific ones anymore. My memory isn't what it used to be in the first place, it seems, but I want to remember those things as much as possible, as long as possible.
There was a point, probably when I was about 30, when I realized how much I had forgotten. I could flip through an old yearbook and not know anybody's name, not recognize all these people who I knew I had classes with. You look at those pictures of your class, can you name most of those people? Can you name any of those people? Maybe a handful. And it's wild because when you're living it, you think you'll never forget those things. And it started to dawn on me that I was really reaching a part of my life where that stuff is so distant that my memories are memories of memories. They're photocopies of memories. And I probably can't trust any of my memories. They're very fragile.
Even now in mid-40s as I am, I find it discouraging how often I'll quote something and then say, okay, did I have the quote right? Because I like to be pedantic online and put the well actually. And I relate to the well actually people. That's not supposed to be a mocking online.
He's a pedant and he's proud.
As is Chris when we do Scoring the Movies. But when I re-listen to things on YouTube to try to find exact quotes, I'm surprised at how often I've misquoted things. The Simpsons thing, we've been mocking it for a long time. We're not mocking, we love it. The finger thing means the money. From one of the Simpsons episodes. It isn't that at all. It's a different
completely
line.
Completely different.
And sometimes it's just a matter of I miss a word or something like that. But I still like to be that anal in what we say. Other times I'm way off. Makes me wonder how many other things in life, in general, whatever, movies, anything, I misremember.
How many times have you seen that particular episode of The Simpsons? If I can remember that wrong and it's something that happened to me 100 times, then how can you possibly trust your memory about an event that you only ever experienced once, be it a fight with your parents or a good thing that happened at school when you were in the 7th grade or your first kiss or you name it. All of our memories are really fragile and untrustworthy. You and I both grew up with siblings. Have you ever sat down and compared notes with your sister about one memory or another that you thought you were really sure about? Because me and Pam have, and it did not go well. We were shocked.
I haven't done that, but it's probably true for us too. Well, when Sadness and Joy are still in the wonderland, if you will, of Riley's mind, I love the train of thought as a transportation device. That's a really nice touch. But most of Sadness's ideas through all that sequence are good ones. Joy's aren't usually. Okay, getting out of the pit with the sled with Bing Bong is a good one. But that doesn't even involve Sadness. Sadness says something and ends up being a good idea for the most part. She also does weird things like taint the memories. I guess they're going to get pushed away anyway. They're in those big racks and they're about to be junked, I guess, or will be junked at some point. But just walking around touching memories and making them sad. But then the movie's also saying that, okay, Riley's going to look back at her Minnesota memories and they'll always be tinged with sadness because she'll miss that. That's not necessarily a terrible thing. And that's what Joy learns. That's what we learn watching the movie. That's what kids can learn watching this movie.
And Riley's growing up. Her life is going to become more complex. I think it could be fair to assume that a kid like her, who's had a pretty charmed childhood, is going to have these uncomplicated, happy memories. But nobody gets to stay that way. We all are going to grow up. And part of growing up is understanding the complexities of everything that we experience. And that means that everything is a mixture of happiness, sadness, fear, anger, disgust, the whole rainbow of emotions.
And that moment at the end with her parents, they're hugging her on the floor, that is a mixed memory. The first mixed emotion she has, as the Rolling Stones would say, mixed emotions. It's both blue and yellow. And then as you see the bigger console, as she's growing up, and of course the puberty button is part of that, it looks as if any one of them can maybe control that thing at one time. They need multiple emotions to control. They can't just be Joy pushing all the buttons because it's too big now. But also you see behind them various emotions that are tinged now. And some of them have many colors, not just two, but even three or four. Also, it's a nice touch in this movie that Riley's emotions, her brain, whatever, is breaking down and falling apart when she's at her lowest and wants to get out of San Francisco and go back to Minnesota. But it's easily rebuilt, which is what happens in The Neverending Story as well. Another movie that's really good about growing up and good movie for kids. Pretty scary. I saw that when I was young, and The Wolf especially, Gmork, terrified me. But then, as some psychologist said a long time ago, kids can have nightmares. Why is that a bad thing?
Yeah. You can't protect children from everything. They are not going to have perfect, untainted lives. And yeah, I agree. I really like that all of her islands get destroyed but they're not gone forever. As a person who's experienced depression, I actually thought this movie illustrated it metaphorically pretty well. The worst thing that happens is she goes numb. This absolute emptiness, voidness of emotions. Yeah, that's actually a pretty good generic description of what true clinical depression can feel like. It's this void.
I'd rather have anger than that, then.
I'd rather have sadness than that. And that's a commonly misunderstood aspect, I think, of depression. That everybody thinks you just have the blues, and that really doesn't sum it up. What they show in the movie is much more accurate.
And sadness is the one who pulls out the runaway idea bulb that anger had put into her. I think it was anger. But she's the one with the power to pull that bulb out. Joy might have had it too, but sadness always had power over things that fear, anger, and disgust didn't have. And I think that's a key point in the whole film.
It's the power of catharsis. There's such a catharsis to indulging in sadness.
So as far as the voice actors, Amy Poehler has a Marge Simpson look. Did you notice that?
Yes, totally.
Blue hair, green dress, and always trying her yellow skin and always trying her best, as Marge does. And of course, she's from big name TV shows, SNL, Parks and Rec, and her movie career is not as impressive. Blades of Glory, I think, is a pretty popular title that did really well. She's a supporting player in that. But this is one of those people that I always find funny and always have. She seems like a cool person as well. When he's talking about recasting again, I don't want to recast any of these people because she was an outstanding choice for Joy.
Agreed.
Phyllis Smith was in Bad Teacher, which I saw again not long ago. Justin Timberlake has that funny thing about, if I could go back and change slavery or abolish slavery, I would. I just hate racism so much. It's really funny. But anyway, she is in Bad Teacher, and that's what got her this role. I can see why. In fact, I thought, that seems like the same character. And then I'm reading when I did my research for Inside Out. Oh, yeah.
I know her mostly from The Office. I've never seen Bad Teacher, but she plays Phyllis in The Office.
Okay, yeah. A lot of people would know her from that. A lot of these people are well-known from TV shows. Bill Hader, SNL, of course. And now Barry, where he's so good. And he's a writer and director. And this guy is an auteur. He's a very talented dude. Seems like a pretty good dude, too. And he's been involved in things, a lot of comedy things. He's an Apatow guy, too, for a very long time. Great impressionist. Does a ton of other voice work and other things, including other Pixar films.
I like him in movies, too, playing real characters. The one that I always think of is Skeleton Twins.
Yeah.
He's wonderful in that movie. Not
with
a perfect
Kristen
movie.
Wiig, SNL veteran also.
He's an incredibly natural actor and hysterically funny. He's so talented.
Mindy Kaling, a writer and actor on The Office as well, and also in Ocean's 8. He hasn't done that many movies yet, but she is really good as discussed. And as I said, that great line about how it's tough to grow up and that's the point, or whatever she said. Louis Black, we know, of course, was Anger. His first movie ever was in Hannah and Her Sisters. I don't remember him in that movie at all, but it says that online, that he was in that movie way back then. And, of course, The Daily Show, too, where he's always been funny. The Fingers, when he does his comedy. What a great piece of casting for Anger.
You mentioned The Mindy Project, right? When you said Mindy Kaling?
I did not. Mindy Project from Mindy Kaling,
okay. And her new show, which I have not seen, Champions?
She's also an Apatow veteran, too, because she was in 40-year-old version as Amy.
And Bill Hader was in the first few episodes of Mindy Project, so I wonder if there was a connection there as well.
A lot of these people seem to know each other from other things. Richard Kind is the voice of Bing Bong, did a ton of TV, still does a ton of TV, many Pixar performances, including in A Bug's Life. He was also in A Serious Man. I always think of him in that movie as much as anything, actually. He is the brother of the main character in that movie that no one saw. That's the Coen Brothers film.
He's just one of those actors that I think most people don't know him by name, but if they saw him in anything, oh yeah, that guy, he's one of those.
We mentioned Frank Oz already because he does a lot of Pixar voices, one of the many in this movie. And then John Ratzenberger, who's always in Pixar films, right towards the end, he's one of the creatures, characters, whatever, that's putting in the new console. And then Paula Pell also did a lot of voices in this movie. I know that name. She's an Amy Poehler friend, I think. Isn't she in that Wine Country movie?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, yes, the blonde?
I guess, yeah.
I think that's
her. Have you said? Yeah, I think that's her. This movie is 185-1. We watched it on the glorious Blu-ray print. It looks outstanding, but most Pixar movies do, especially the more modern ones. The editor, Kevin Nolting, has only worked on Up and this, just those two editing projects for him as the main editor. But he was an assistant editor for over 30 years. So he knows what he's doing as an editor. I think the movie's cut pretty well.
30 years as an assistant. Oh, my God. What a purgatory.
And the composer, Michael, I always get this name wrong, Giacchino. I think it's Giacchino. Won an Oscar for Up and a lot of other Pixar movies he's worked on. The composer on Lost, the TV show. What a resume. Way more than that. I'm only mentioning a few things. And I think could have been nominated for this music score just like he was for Up. But of course, Up is a better one, I guess. What do you think of the cutting and the music? There's not really a cinematographer to talk about in this movie, although talk about the look, I guess. It does look beautiful, really colorful.
Colorful, and it has this great 60s poppy aesthetic.
Triple income.
I think it's cute. They could really play around with it because most of it takes place in kind of an imagination world. So they had fun with it and they made it really colorful and fun. That's great. The editing is absolutely perfect. The pacing is so good. You just don't even realize it goes by in such a flash. It's hard to believe it's a 90-minute film. They really leave you wanting more, which is more than you can say for the vast majority of movies. One of the things I don't like about kids' movies, I find all the scores sound the same and they're all really over-expressive and
I think you liked the upscore, didn't you?
I do love the upscore. You know, if I was going to rate Pixar films, Up would probably be my number one. Inside Out, I'm not sure. It's in the top five up there with Toy Story 3.
That's saying a lot.
Really heavy score that does a lot of the emotional heavy lifting for the film.
Yeah.
Those are things that I don't ever like in a movie, so it has to be so exceptional for me to see past those things. But the pacing is unimpeachable. It is such a well-edited film. I use quotation marks because who knows how the process works in Pixar. But no, editing is part of that. I know I've worked on animation before as an editor.
Great editing.
Yeah, yeah.
Could have been nominated. Should have been nominated. Pixar films have, if ever, rarely been nominated. Animated films in general are rarely nominated for that.
Yeah, it's like a real blind spot in the Academy.
One thing about this movie, too, is it's an outlier in the 2010s, whatever, because Pixar just didn't do it very often in the 2010s. Between Toy Story 3 in 2010 and Toy Story 4 last year, which had its faults, but I did like it and had some pretty great moments, too. But that's 9 years. And the only two Pixar films in that whole stretch I really liked, not just, okay, it's fine, were Incredibles 2, which I didn't really like, but I liked, and Inside Out, which I loved. So the only one in the whole stretch between 3 and 4 of the Toy Stories would be Inside Out, Incredibles, a 3-star movie. Inside Out, for me, the best movie of 2015. Spotlight was a very worthy Oscar winner for Best Picture. And I liked Creed, and I can't think of the other ones right now, but Inside Out, for me, was the best movie of 2015.
We had to probably understand in our hearts that the golden age of Pixar was going to end someday, and it's starting to really feel now like...
Cars 2 was the one that ended that.
Oh, well, you say that, but they've made some really wonderful films since then, like Inside Out and Toy Story 3, but Good Dinosaur, Onward.
They had never failed until Cars 2 to make a good movie. Cars 2 is so misguided. Making Mater the main character, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in that opinion.
And Cars, the first one, is the worst of their original run of perfection, because that's a thumb up, but barely a thumb up.
Merchandising-wise, Cars, it's everywhere. Second only to maybe Frozen as number one lunch boxes I see every time I see a child. They either have Cars or Frozen merchandise on them at all times.
Yep.
It must have struck a chord with kids, and it's making them money, and especially now that Disney owns them, they're like, integrity, what? Cha-ching? I only hear that Cars 5, 6, and 7 is going to make my stock go up, and that's all I care about.
The connection with this movie, of course, is Herman's Head, which lasted for 3 seasons in the early 90s. Yardley Smith and Hank Azaria, Simpsons voice actors even then, were in that. I never saw that show. I don't know if they're the emotions in his head or just characters in the show itself.
As I recall, they're kind of like the administration in the head. And I don't think they're emotions specifically, but they all do jobs. I can't remember exactly how it worked, but I remember liking the show. It's like this really high-minded concept, and it was cute. It worked.
But Inside Out owes a debt to that show. Okay, then, last thoughts on a wonderful film. And what a change of pace from 13th. But like we've been doing lately, it's been a hard, gutsy, real film like Traffic, docudrama that was. Then it was Total Recall. Then it was 13th. And now it's Inside Out. And the next week will be very real again with Apollo 13. But anyway, your last thoughts on a very fantastical, wonderful film, Inside Out.
It's not the very best Pixar film, but it is so special in the spark of originality and emotional intelligence and real truth. I don't know, maybe it gets an extra boost for really taking a chance and hitting the mark.
It could really help kids, too, more than most movies. Kids should see this kind of movie, especially when you're around that age, 11, 12, when you've already gone through some things because you're a human being, let alone a kid, but then you're going into puberty around that same time. And this movie could definitely help that. There should be an Inside Out 2. I don't know how exactly it would go, but that would make a lot of sense.
Apparently there's been rumors that they've thought about it, but I guess they've just never...
Three Cars movies, it could be an Inside Out 2. But this is certainly one of the most creative things they've ever done. It had me in tears repeatedly. I was manly about it, but it did happen. Hey, it's manly to cry. We know that now. Okay, next week's episode would represent the next 200 project. But that next 100 project numbering system is way outdated, and I'm tired of doing it. It was my idea, but enough is enough. So to repeat, we'll still be called the Top 100 Project in your feed, and you can still use the promo code to get your Sparkplug coffee discount as Top 100 Project. But from Apollo 13 onward, Pixar movie, it'll be the Ellis's Analysis. The coming attraction's opinion, again an opinion question for Apollo 13. The moments where everyone waits to see if the Odyssey crew survived re-entry always has me in knots. And we know they survived. It's based on a real story. Plus, I've seen it many times. What other movies where you know the result, either because you've seen the movie before or because it's a true story, always have you on the edge of your seat about what's gonna happen?
All right, so for our answers to that question, check out our next podcast about Apollo 13. And in the meantime, you can check out our website, top100project.com. It's still called that. Don't forget to favorite or subscribe to the Top 100 Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, where hundreds of episodes are available for free. And that includes all 123 movies that made the AFI's 1998 and or 2007 lists of the best American films ever made. And then all of our wonderful Ellis's Analysis movies.
Number one is next week.
Ellis's Analyses. For all of the Ellis's Analyses, well, of which there
Ellis's
are hundreds.
Analysis of movies, I guess, is what it really would be.
Ellis's Analyses is the plural.
Yeah, see, we're already arguing about this. Maybe it hasn't even happened yet.
I love it. All right, Ryan and I are both on Twitter. I'm at Bev Ellis Ellis, and Ryan is at MovieFiend51. Or you can reach us by email, which is still top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And to enjoy freshly roasted premium coffee delivered straight to you in Canada or the US, please go to sparkplugcoffee.com and use the promo code TOP100PROJECT. That's all one word, TOP100PROJECT. It's not case sensitive, and that will get you a 20% discount.
Next week, Tom Hanks is going to take us to the moon for me, okay? Oh. Wait, almost to the moon.
Are you going to cry?
Take her to the moon for me, okay?
And cut.